No mai haere mai ki tēnei hōtaka. Welcome to the panel. Coming up on the program, be it sewage overflows to beaches, campylobacter issues or sewage bubbling to streets, water has become a major issue. And today it was announced that three waters reform will be mandatory for councils as the legislation moves ahead. We discuss that today. And poor ventilation and crowded indoor buildings are risk factors for the transmission of COVID-19. We have an engineer who helped design negative pressure systems for Green Lane Hospital during the SARS outbreak. What do we need to know? And has New Zealand's public sector become disconnected from the public? Also, it's time to retire the term anti-vaxxer, says one psychologist. Also, I'll just wait till the words come in. That's the one. What do you think is the best cover version of a song? This is the Mutton Birds version of a Formula song. Text us on that 2101 or email the panel at rnz.co.nz. With me today, Nalini Baruch, the founder of Lotte. Kia ora, Nalini.
Hi, Ed Wallace.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Good. And Patrick Smalley, the editor and co-founder of Business Dex. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Dr. Wallace.
Nice to have you both on. So Nalini and Patrick with me this afternoon. Now, dear panel, by the way, it's Wednesday afternoon, so it's always a dear panel. We take a look through the emails and pick out two emails. And here's one from Adam in Auckland. A simple question for your panel. What things, steps are you doing to help you get through the lockdown? This from a personal perspective. So Adam wants a personal take from each of our guests. Nalini, why don't you go first?
I've been cooking through COVID.
Yeah. Explain more. You're not. It's not a real lockdown, is it, for you guys?
Well, no, we're in the country. And it's pretty much business as usual, except
Martinborough, right?
Martinborough, except Auckland is my bread and butter, and so I am a little stuck. I truly feel the effect of COVID.
In what way?
Well, there are no sales. There are no orders coming from Auckland at all. So if hospital in Auckland is not working, I am not working.
Ah, I see. So for those of you who don't know, Lot 8 is olive oils. Do know because we buy olive oil and we also buy Lot 8. And you're kind of an award-winning olive oil, aren't you? So a lot of restaurants would use your olive oils.
Yes, and a lot of the restaurants that use Lot 8 are in Auckland. We at least have 60% of our trade. Woo. Through Auckland. It's just quite significant.
That's huge.
So we would like to see Auckland open up.
Okay, so explain the cooking thing. Expand on that.
I love cooking. That's my way of coping with stress. And COVID's been great because my husband and I, have been spending a lot of time at home, and I've spent quite a bit of that in the kitchen.
Nice.
He's been doing a lot of eating.
Yeah. Is there a dish that's top of mind right now?
Chicken curry, I think.
Beautiful. Yeah. Can't go past chicken curry. And before we go to Patrick, that's quite significant—a 60% reduction in your income.
Auckland trade.
So that would be not only financially, but also, I guess, mentally quite fatiguing.
Yes. It's just not knowing when we can expect to start receiving what was pre-March 2020 type orders.
Mm. Okay, Patrick Smalley.
Well, I'm in Wellington, so I'm a little bit like Lini, that I can't say that I'm taking a huge hit COVID-wise, but I'd say two-thirds of the Business Dex staff are in Auckland. And I'd say as an employer, not in Auckland, I can certainly see the and feel and hear every day the stress that that's placed all of our people under up there. And I suppose the one thing that from a business perspective anyway, that we've really needed to do during this period is just to go easy on people and understand that life's a bit difficult. I mean, I have a daughter living up there as well, so I have a good sense of how disconnected people feel and how worried people have been, and at times how not exactly frightened, but sort of discombobulated they've been by the fact that we've gone from this elimination phase where we thought we'd done really well to discovering that actually, just like everybody else, we're going to have to go through with this damn thing.
Yeah, well put, well put. All right, dear panel, completely different letter. Here's one for you. My partner, she's 18 years younger than I, in brackets, and has just discovered the joys of wallpaper, her words. For me, living through the 70s, wallpaper had no joy. It was in the kitchen. It was in my bedroom. Wallpaper was in the bathroom. Florals everywhere. Hated it. My partner wants a feature wall. This is 2021. I said that the decor is entirely up to her, but I'm putting my foot down at wallpaper. I feel mean about having a serious conversation about, of all things, decor, but there we have it. Thoughts, asks Mark in Otatahi, Christchurch. So around the panel, because I'm old enough to actually recall Nalini when wallpaper, I mean, it was a shocker, so I am also anti-wallpaper. It was in the hallway, it was in the bathroom, it was in the kitchen, and if you were to ask me, the world has no place for wallpaper. Nalini Baruch.
Yeah, I know. My 1980s flat still had the 1950s wallpaper on it, so I clearly remember. And that top edge that started curling that nobody ever got around to writing it. Did he say he's 18 years older?
Yeah, so Mark's partner is 18 years younger. And has discovered the joys of wallpaper. I guess wallpaper is now on trend.
Yes, yeah. He needs to get jiggy with it because wallpaper is back. And as a matter of fact, we have a wonderful bespoke makeup wallpaper here in Martinborough. And I understand he's doing really well. So it's come back.
You have a bespoke wallpaper maker in Martinborough?
Yeah, well, he makes, you know, to batch. And so you can take your design to him and say, Ben, would you be able to make this for me? And Ben will look into it. And he's doing some wonderful work.
Good grief.
Truly wonderful work.
All right. Patrick, you'd have wallpaper all over your place.
I have to say that I've just never had any emotional reaction to the question of wallpaper ever. I think the only thing I can think of to say is that I think the very first story I ever wrote as a journalist for the National Business Review in 1978, was it that? No, 83. Sorry, I'm not that old. Was about the impact of import licensing on the price of wallpaper. So if you'd like to know about that, I'm your man.
Can you recall the article?
It was a shocker.
You've got me interested now. All right. So what is the answer? The answer really to Mark, I guess, to expand on the linear is that you've really got to, things change. And what might have been a shocker in the 1970s, and no one wallpapers their bathroom or toilet anymore. But, you know, you can have a feature wall. There are new designs, aren't there, Nalini? And get with it.
Yeah.
Get with the program and actually sort of cheer up.
And maybe his partner might want to buy a magazine or two and just leave it on the coffee table for him to flick through.
Yeah.
I'm just worried that we're inadvertently favouring big wallpaper here.
Mark says, well, it's wrong again. Wallpaper. Mark's got my back. Wallpaper wrong again. Wallpaper is actually great. No second coat required, unlike painting. By the way, really large response to your favourite cover versions. The best, Ron says, the best cover is this Mortal Coil's cover of Tim Buckley's Song to the Siren and Jimi Hendrix's All Along the Watchtower, obviously. Teresa says, the Isley Brothers version of Summer Breeze, way better than the original Seals and Crofts version. Interesting. Okay, time for I've Been Thinking. Nalini Baruch, you start.
I've been thinking very much about something that happened to me in the last couple of weeks. I've had a couple of conversations with people who speak my language, my first language, which is Hindi. I happened to drop something off with someone who started talking to me in Hindi the moment I arrived in the room. And that was fantastic because in my day-to-day life, I don't actually hear Hindi being spoken. But it was really sad. What was really sad, Wallace, is that I was trying to converse with him, but there were words missing in my head, or they were in my head, but they just couldn't come to my lips. And I realized then that after 42 years of living in New Zealand, I'm really starting to lose some of my language. So I'm going to have to work hard to bring it back. And language is a living thing. If you don't use it, you lose it. And it's part of your culture. So I need to retain it, which means talking to mum a lot more, mum and dad a lot more, and a lot more Bollywood maybe. But also just engaging with people here who speak the language.
One of the, I have a very, very clear memory. It's a Saturday morning, very sunny day in the 80s, and my father gets off the phone. We moved to Nelson. My father gets off the phone to his, my nana, his mother, and my father's Fijian. So his first language was Fijian. He got off the phone and said, he shook his head and said, "I'm losing my language."
Yes.
And he was actually quite sad about it, Nalini.
It is quite sad. My husband said to me, "You've not been looking yourself in the last couple of days, over the last couple of days." And I said, "I actually feel quite sad. I feel sad about what's happening to me, but there's time to reverse it. I intend to do that."
Good on you. Really nice. I've been thinking. Patrick Smalley, I've been thinking.
I've been thinking about stopping doing social media altogether. I think this is partly a COVID thing and partly because I've got really angry reading the Washington Post and other American media reports of what Facebook has been up to. I mean, I sort of went off Facebook after the March mosque shootings. I just thought I don't want my inane burblings to be monetized by people who would live stream, a murderous massacre by a complete idiot. But I sort of drifted back into it. But it just seems to me that Facebook in particular has struck me increasingly as being corrosive to all kinds of social norms. And I found that on the one hand, I feel like I've got a big case of FOMO because a lot of my friends are on there, and it's a way I've actually reconnected with a lot of people that I'd lost contact with over the years. But I also feel slightly calmer as a result of having decided I'm not going back there at all. And so I'm just reflecting at the moment on whether I might actually extend that to Twitter, because, I mean, I've been on social media for 12 years now, and I sort of feel like there might come a point at which you actually just get sick of it.
Get over it.
I know I've learnt lots of things about social media, like never argue with anybody, especially never argue with anybody late at night because it ruins your sleep.
Yes.
I've quite kind of had fun with it, but it started to really annoy me the way that it just has this kind of, I don't want to say it's evil, but it's certainly corrosive and antisocial in some way in its impact. And you're seeing that particularly in the way that so much misinformation and sort of craziness is radiating through society. It must have been other ways that it did it previously, but it seems to me that it supercharges it with the algorithmic approach.
My question to you though, Patrick Smalley, is once you turn off Facebook and possibly Twitter, what are you going to do?
I thought I'd read a book.
Do some cooking? Is that really?
I'm a complete hypocrite at one level because business desk will keep on advertising and trying to find subscribers through Facebook. It's a very
there
effective medium for doing that.
There you go. But, you'll be back.
Personally speaking,
Patrick, I'm about to let go of Twitter.
Whoa! It's all happening here on the panel.
Yep.
All right, Nalini Baruch and Patrick Smalley with me this afternoon. Do stay with us 4 to 5 right here. There's a lot to discuss today.